Science perspective.
Welcome to a Writer in the Lab podcast from Newcastle University, providing you with inside perspectives from scientists and engineers in their own words, discussing the nature of science and engineering, the joys and challenges of doing research, and why it matters.
In part two of this episode on the Water Security and Sustainable Development Hub led by Newcastle University, we continue our discussion on water security with water resource engineers and social scientists who are working together with partners around the world to tackle barriers to water security and help achieve Goal 6 of the Sustainable Development Goals, clean water and sanitation.
This morning, we probably both got up and we had a shower, turned on the tap, got a glass of water and had a drink, and we probably didn't give it that much thought. We got the benefit of the water supply. We might have thought a bit about turning on that tap or turning on the shower, but we probably didn't think about the huge network of pipes that got that water to our house, the treatment plants that cleaned water and made it fit for human consumption, and of course the subsequent wastewater treatment plants that took that water away, cleaned it up, and allowed it to be safely discharged into our local rivers and seas. Behind that still, that physical part of the system, there's a whole host of organizational issues, people trained to ensure that these things operate, and of course financial services that ensure that the infrastructure can be maintained, operated, and investment can be provided when it's needed. All of these things make up the kind of the water security system in this country, and every day we consume our water and probably give very little thought to all of that. And this is why it's so difficult to see the system, because so much of it is invisible. Beyond that tap and maybe a first few stretches of pipe, most people probably do not really think about it until the water runs dry. But we're very fortunate. Many other parts of the world have huge challenges. Challenges because there is no water infrastructure system that connects directly into their house. Challenges because they do not have toilets. They have smartphones often, but not a toilet. Challenges because there is limited investment and huge development priorities, not just focused in and around water. Pressures because of limited environmental regulation that's leading to pollution of what water resources are available. All of these things are important, and without them all, the water security system fails. My background is civil engineering, very much focused on tackling water-related challenges. And indeed, many of our approaches to tackling water security focus in and around the technical parts of the system. And so quite often we see well-intended investments in, for example, new pumps, new wells to provide local water resources to populations. These are very important ways of getting water to people, but on their own, they often fail. And the reasons for this is because we focus very much on that sort of visible and key interaction between the people and the water supply, i.e. the taps, the pumps, the well. What excites me about water is how important it is to everything on the planet. It's fundamental to human life. It's crucial for our health. If we drink dirty water, we get ill. And indeed, around the world, millions die as a result of dirty, polluted water. If we don't have water, we can't grow food. If we don't have water, we struggle to generate energy, because water is crucial for cooling power stations, or indeed is crucial for generating electricity through hydroelectric power stations. What we fail to implement is the wider aspects of the system, to educate communities in how to sustainably consume water resources, to build capacity and train people to actually repair these pumps, these wells, when they fall apart, and provide supply chains to actually bring in spare parts that are often needed when things fall apart. And so as a result of failing to build sustainable water security systems, billions of pounds of investment often fall apart in under 10 years of actually delivery of the engineering infrastructure. And so it's absolutely crucial to take a systems perspective that looks across both the environmental aspects of water supply, the social aspects of water supply, and of course, the engineering components as well. One of the major challenges and research activities within this hub is to actually enable people and help them participate in conversations around water. And we have a number of ideas for doing that, using and developing this idea of something like a community water charter to actually help consolidate and channel the ideas of the community and use that as a more powerful mechanism for engaging with big organizations and government. But it's also crucial to involve these organizations in these discussions as well. They're not just sort of there to be asked to deliver things. They have interests, motivations, and things that they value too. And so it's absolutely crucial to engage across all of these different scales of water governance and people who have an interest in this water security system to ensure that we deliver something that meets the needs of all of the key agencies and actors and individuals involved. To look across a bigger water system, we do have to, of course, look at the array of physical assets, how they interconnect, how the pipes transmit water, just as we think about energy networks transmitting power. We have to understand key parts, critical nodes in this, where water is often treated. But it's not just about the technology. We have to also understand the role of people in this system. So how individuals consume, how key actors, farmers, energy generators use precious water supplies. So climate change is a huge driver on water security. It has the potential to significantly reduce the availability of water resources in large parts of the world, but it is one of many drivers that actually affect the security of water supply to people. In addition to climate change, we also see growing or changing demographics of populations. We see pollution, which is actually taking out, removing large quantities of water supply as pollutants enter our groundwater. And what we have to do in this program of work is actually look at all of these drivers of change and understand how we can build in water security, accounting for all of these pressures.
So I'm Dr. Claire Walsh, and I'm a lecturer in the Water Resources Group at Newcastle University. And my role in the hub is to co-lead Workstream One, which will develop a global network of local water collaboratories. So when we think about building resilient systems for water security, really requires an integrated view which bridges across hydrological, environmental, social, cultural, economic and political processes that span across catchment management, agriculture, policy, financing, institutions. So I came from a geography background. My first degree was in geography, mainly physical geography. And this sort of gives you a broad understanding of the physical processes and the natural environment. And then I moved over to engineering to do my PhD. And that's really when I became interested in engineering and recognising, as we've just been talking about, this the importance of this systems approach to be able to find this, you know, this best solution, not just for the problem that you're looking at, but for, you know, what are the ripple effects? Can we do that more widely? And I guess when you're thinking about, obviously I do a lot of work and related around water security, and water security is fundamental to sustainable development. But yet water issues present the single biggest threat to developments, whether that being through there being too much or there being too little, whether it's of poor quality or whether it's costing too much. And the widespread impacts burden the poorest and the most vulnerable disproportionately. So in order to address water security, an interdisciplinary research is needed. An interdisciplinary research requires effective and regular contact to build up this collaborative respect and understanding that's needed across all parties and across all disciplines. So in order to establish our local collaboratories, our approach really is to be community-led and to promote open innovation. And these are going to be open to all stakeholders to meet on an equal basis, so to jointly question and discuss and construct new ideas to resolve this complex challenge of water security. We're working with colleagues in computing to sort of set up, using actual data, set up scenarios and play out these games in local contexts.
That sounds really cool.
It does, doesn't it?
So how do people play these games then?
These will be co-created with the communities to make sure that they are useful for this learning and for also to be used as an engagement and a dialogue. So hopefully, if they're set in the local context, the communities and stakeholders will recognise what the situation is and what the issues are, and hopefully, really get on board with that. For me, I think it's really important to have that local context and understanding and awareness. And you can only of the situation, and the problems that we're trying to tackle, and when we're assessing the solutions and whether they're suitable. And the only way you can really do that is to understand, what the people think. Is it working for them? If not, why not? What could we do better? So in identifying problems and challenges with them at the outset, really found through projects I've been involved in that the methods and approaches that we then take are more suitable, and the community really gets in involved. We need to create solutions that work. Otherwise, why bother? Our resources now are so finite that we've got to get this right. And I think the only way to get it right is to make sure we understand the problems and the challenges to begin with properly, and that can only come from those that are actually experiencing those problems and actually understanding those challenges. So we need to work with people throughout the process to design whatever research might be needed to better understand what's going on, and then also as we get towards these solutions and decisions and choices, to make sure that they are right, so that so they're not just put in place and they're left, that we monitor them, we evaluate them, and if necessary we go back around the circle again and we redesign them to make sure we're getting the outcome that is desired for all.
My name's Dr. Kat Button, and I'm a lecturer of global urbanisms in the planning department, the School of Architecture, Planning and Landscape here. I'm also the DPD of the MSc in Urban Planning. And my interests in research, the key thing is I'm interested in how people and communities cope with having too much or too little water. So that means I've looked at how people are dealing with water shortages. So that could include droughts in Mumbai, looking at rainwater harvesting, and in northern China on a GCRF resilience project, looking at droughts there, and also at flooding, and that's been in delta areas of Vietnam and Bangladesh. What I'm personally interested in is the idea of governing, so the processes and the people who might be involved. And I think it's important to think about how governing or governance is at a multiple layer of scales. So it could be that it's intergovernmental, or that it's state level governance. It could be cities and their mayors or their local authorities making decisions and governing, but it can also be the processes of self-governance of communities, of working out how that infrastructure might work and might be put there. So I'd say that it's very much about who's doing it, at what scale, how those scales interact is something I find interesting, and how might work between different scales or cause tensions or have different intents. And that's those frictions. I think we see those. That's when we become aware of the powers that are at play. And I think power is another word that's important when we're thinking about infrastructure and water in particular, that they're both very political. And that water is a political issue. And that could be the very obvious issues of who gets the water from a river that crosses a border, for example. But it can also be political in the ideas of who gets access to piped water, and who makes those decisions about which communities get water, how much, whether a community is legal. So I guess if we're thinking about the governance of water infrastructure in a lot of the global south, we might be thinking about very dense urban areas and which housing is legal or who is responsible for supplying that water to different areas. And you might have conflicts, particularly as cities expand, that they might go across different local authorities, for example, or different state governance if it's federal, and then who actually has that responsibility. And that's an important thing about that this isn't just a massive research project over 5 years. It's hub, and so it's about building capacity, and it's about building networks and feeding back and how those connections are going to happen. And so for me, that's what's exciting, is that it isn't just about going out and researching, but it's about thinking about, well, I'm a social scientist within this, and this is a project led by engineering, and perhaps there's a huge range of different interdisciplinary connections that can be made, and that it can sort of not be put in a box, but be thinking about how I might work with other people and how we can communicate the research that we do, our values, into the other work packages, and think about how they can be used and reflected upon to make, you know, technological solutions appropriate, for example, or to show that, you know, and to really foster that learning across the hub between the different places and between different ways of doing things. So I think we're going to be working in quite an emergent way, so that based around those hubs in India, Malaysia, Ethiopia and Colombia, be thinking about, well, what are the issues? What are the structures around that? And what kind of tensions might there be in the governance of that water infrastructure and maintaining security? So the hidden voices, I guess, are the people and the communities who aren't being heard or aren't being listened to. Perhaps they don't have the power. They could be suppressed in some ways. But I think it's, you know, that they have a role in... So they have an importance in how water is managed, and that they be accessing that water and thinking around water security issues for either access to water, resilience against shortage, resilience against flooding, and thinking about, you know, whose ideas and needs actually are prioritized in the structures that happen. So again, it comes back to these questions of power, and if people aren't being heard, then they might not get prioritized, they might not be seen as having as much worth by, you know, whoever is making those decisions. So how do you bring that out?
My name is Professor Pauline Dixon, and I'm a Professor of International Development and Education here at Newcastle University. I've been working in informal settlements now for 20 years. And these informal settlements are really made up of people coming to big cities in search of opportunities. The wonderful thing about these hubs is that it's partly due to the capacity building, and it's the capacity building that experts from around the world can bring to some amazing NGOs and amazing people and communities that have been struggling to do work on their own and maybe haven't had a voice before. So when I first started working in development, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I think what was really important, I was either going to do something around health or something around education. And in 1999, I was a very late starter. In 1999, what was really important was education for all. And then we got the Millennium Development Goals. And education for all was a very interesting topic because it was assumed that a lot of children weren't going to school. So the research that we did here at Newcastle actually highlighted the fact that this was a mistaken goal because a lot of children were already going to school. It's just they were going to schools that people didn't know existed. So really what we're looking for, not just in government schools, but in all of the different ways that children can learn, all of the different ways, NGOs, faith-based mission schools, outside school, within the communities themselves, what we're looking for is for children to actually come out with an education that actually means something, whether it's in their communities, but something that is meaningful to drive these goals forward and to see the world a better place in 2030. Initially, we'll be going into the communities and asking the children who would like to be involved. Some might think that, well, maybe you should start in schools, such as with the Bharti Foundation in India, or clubs that already exist, such as Voice for Girls in India. You should start there. But actually, there are children who are very marginalised within those communities that probably would like to get involved. So that's a hidden voice of a child who isn't even going to school. So you could have a 12 or 13-year-old girl who no longer goes to school because they don't have a separate toilet for girls. She's experiencing becoming a woman and she can't go to school. So, but maybe she will be one of the citizen scientists that actually grows within the science club. And she might be one of the people that hold the science club together. So what they'll be doing, they'll have on their iPhone or on their iPad an app that will allow them to take the GPS coordinates of different water issues within their communities. So it could be, they could be looking for a stream, they could be looking for a water pump that isn't working, but they'll take a photograph of it, they will GPS it, and then we'll give them something to do about it, working maybe with David Graham, looking at taking samples, so that not only will they be mapping things with using an app to do with water and hygiene, but they'll also be gathering samples and doing little experiments around water security and sanitation and hygiene. You know, me as a social scientist, as somebody who wants to make a difference, who sees injustice in the world or sees people struggling or actually sees people being absolutely amazing and then just wants to make a difference. What I'm really good at as a social scientist, I think, is doing household surveys. It's doing interviews with people. It's getting people to talk to me as an individual. And it's probably to do with when you go into an informal settlement, I think people make a judgment about you straight away. If you're going with someone, that's great. If you're going with somebody who you've worked with before, that's fantastic because you've got that. But also it's the fact that people judge you as soon as they see you, I would say. So as a social scientist, I'm somebody who, I think, comes across as somebody who really wants to make a difference, who really cares, and who wants to hear those hidden voices, who wants to hear what people have to say. I think probably what comes across is I'm not somebody who's going to come in as an official, a top-down approach, this is what you should be doing, why are you not doing this? But I'm somebody who's saying, what is happening here? What's happening here? Why are you doing this? And I think that's what makes me a social scientist who is very interested in what's happening on the ground. And as we've already said about looking at individual behaviour and why this behaviour is happening and how you can actually look at that through a different culture lens, I guess. So you're looking at different people's cultures and so on. So as a social scientist, it's very important for me to find out what's happening at the grassroots. And the only way you can make a difference is by having gold standard research to inform policy and to inform practice and to have these people's voices made heard as to what is actually needed in an informal settlement, in a slum area, around water and sanitation.
You have been listening to a Writer in the Lab podcast from Newcastle University, presented by me, Emily Barker, and produced by Brett Cherry and Tommy Howell. If you want to learn more about our research in science, agriculture and engineering, then visit our website at www.ncl.ac.uk/stage. Thanks for listening and see you next time.